Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, December the 31st. And today we're going to chat with our friend Marcos Nelson Suarez. We're going to talk about Cuba and the situation down in Cuba. I want to make sure that everybody gets a very happy New Year greeting, whether you're listening to us today on the 31st or whether you listen to the podcast later, January the 1st. I hope everyone has a very happy New Year and a very successful 2019. I hope it brings you everything you want, prosperity, happiness, whatever it is that you need in your life right now. I also want to send a special greetings to our friends over at Babalu. We're going to be posting the show over at the Babalu blog later today. So again, if you listen to us today or on Monday or Tuesday, the 1st of January, Happy New Year to you. December 31st is a date that means a great deal to us Cubans, or at least my generation, I'll put it that way, because it was on December 31st, 1958, that my parents put the three of us to bed, normal time, I guess, as was the case back then. And then when we woke up the next morning, something big had happened in Cuba, something very significant had happened in Cuba. My mother was like, you know, helping us eat breakfast, and my dad was on the phone, the radio was on, the television was on. It was obviously something consequential. I was not at the time, I was six, so at the time I was picking up as much as a six-year-old can pick up. But nevertheless, I knew something important had happened, and every time that we would try to get my dad's attention, he would wave at us and say, you know, wait, I'm on the phone right now. Of course, what my dad was talking on the phone about and what was going on the radio and the TV is that Batista had fled in the early hours of the 1st or the late hours of the 31st. I'm not clear. And there was going to be a change in Cuba, a change that resulted in Fidel Castro coming into Havana and a few days later. And of course, we know the rest of the story. This year, they are celebrating the 60th anniversary of this event, and I think the country faces a few challenges, and that's why we've invited our friend Marcos Nelson to spend some time with us today. Marcos Nelson, welcome. It's always a great honor to say hello to you, and especially today, Happy New Year to you and to your lovely wife.
Happy New Year to you and your great family, and 60 years, okay.
Oh my, what can you say? That's amazing.
It is something that nobody, no the pundits, no the Cuban people, nobody really thought that this will last 60 years. It's just amazing.
No one did, and I always get a kick out of I was talking to a friend of my father. My father passed away a few years ago, but he had a friend who also passed away, and I remember one time we were having a Cuban party, and my friend was talking to his friend. My dad was talking to his friend, and his friend said, you know, if I had predicted December 1958 that Castro was going to come in, I would have been a millionaire because I would have won all the bets, because nobody predicted that. So Cuba has always been unpredictable. That's my point. But this year, Marcos Nelson, there's a couple of very interesting things happening. Now, number one, historic, we have a nun Castro who will be making the big speech of the day. There's usually a parade and so on. And the other issue is the economy. Let's go to the first issue first, the historic fact that there's not going to be a Castro delivering the big speech. What do you make of that, Marcos Nelson?
Well, I mean, that is normal based on the fact that they decide that we're going to have a new leader, and this new leader is going to have limited time in power, something that hasn't happened in 58 years. So even if I believe that Mr. Díaz-Canel, the current president of Cuba, is just a puppet still, not only of Raúl Castro, but what they call the historical ones. I mean, the people who fought with Castro, the comandantes, and all of that. They put this guy there just as a window dressing, but I believe that in the background, who is moving the puppet is Mr. Castro and the historicals. But let me be clear on something. I believe that they put Mr. Canel there is because they know that he will not dare to change course, and he will follow everything that they need to do in order to keep in power.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Very interesting observation, because if you look at the actions that he has taken, he has really been not at all very creative in what he's doing. I mean, the actions that he's taken could have easily happened or could have easily been made by Raul Castro had he stayed in power. And so I think you're exactly right. This is not going to be a man who I believe, at least until now, from what we know now, this is not going to be a man who I think will be willing to challenge the status quo, as they say in English. Now, what about the economy, though? Because the economic information, of course, the Cuban economy has always been a mess. We know that. But this year, it seems like the mess is messier. Everything is underperforming in Cuba. Not just the usual things, but everything is underperforming. There's nothing going right. Díaz-Canel himself admitted in a speech that productivity is down, that economists are saying there's not enough economic growth to keep people happy. And once again, what we hear from the Cuban government is sacrificio, or more and more sacrifice. How do you analyze that, Marcos Nelson?
Well, I mean, you know, we just need to look at the fact that that Cuba is going to have a new constitution this coming year, and the constitution at the beginning, the discussions, quote unquote, that they have with the people. Surprise, because the draft didn't include, for example, the term communism. And apparently that didn't make too many of the historical ones happy, and they put the word back. Canel took power in a moment when Raul Castro had initiated several he had taken several small steps in order to give more freedom, limited again, to the entrepreneurs and business people in Cuba. And what everybody was expecting is that he will make those reforms a little more solid. And actually what he's doing is taking back the reforms, going back into more control by the government. And there is a new campaign in Cuba to end illegalities. That's how he called it. We can translate that into black market. And everything in Cuba works based on the black market. I give you an example, and I think that this kind of explain more or less really work. If you open a restaurant, you don't have a Costco or a Sam's or any big store or a small store where you can go and buy legally the meat and the rice and the chicken and the product that you need to make the restaurant work. So how do you get the food that these restaurants, private restaurants, serve to the people? Somebody has to be stolen from the state because he's the owner of everything, and then sell it to you. The government knows that that's the way it happened. They just allow it. And when you allow something but it's illegal, you know that you can end it anytime you want, and everybody knows this this fact. So
right.
Now they are imposing new restrictions with this call to end illegalities. And what is happening is that some people aren't even closing the small business. They are putting more obstacles to the new entrepreneurs, charging outrageous taxes, and people realize that they cannot make money with that. And that is not just restaurants. We are talking maybe one of the most important points that nobody really talked that much about it is that private cars, because people now have the right to own a car, they have been putting in so much strength that they have been making these stops in the work, creating havoc with the transportation, particularly in Havana City.
Right, because as you were mentioning to me off the air, a lot of the transportation in Havana is done through basically, it's not technically Uber, but it's sort of a taxi system where a private a private citizen will drive people around. You know, it'll be like, you know, a Cuban version of Uber. And this, of course, has relieved a lot of the transportation problems, probably has allowed a lot more people to move around. But if you shut that down, if you shut that down, that creates a lot of issues which, you know, have an impact on productivity because people cannot go to work and so on. Now, one of the things that I find very interesting about what is happening in Cuba, and that is that they keep talking about reforms. They keep talking about reforms and reforms. But the in a sense, you feel like they're going back. They're going back, especially with the economy, and also even politically. I mean, there has been no improvement whatsoever on political speech or political dissent. I mean, it's still very much controlled. And I just don't know whether the people, the people you call the historians or the older generation, I don't know whether they understand that they're in a sense increasing the chance of a radical change by not making some reform possible, Marco Nilsson.
They are doing everything they can to lose power. Every measure that they are taking, even the reforms, the objective has been stay in power. And unfortunately, they are not following to a certain extent what is happening in China or what is happening in Vietnam, and because they are terrified of the fact that if people make money, if people have certain freedom to make money and to decide their own destiny, at the end, they're going to try also to get political power, and that is historical. The French Revolution happened because of that. So everything they are doing is to maintain power based on the fact that for the last 60 years they have been through every bad period in the economy in Cuba, and they have been successful in keeping the power. So I guess what they are saying is, hey, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when the special period happened, that was one of the most awful chapters in the Cuban history after the fall of the Soviet Union, we were able to stay in power and people resist the idea that making a change will improve their lives and they are afraid.
Right.
Yeah.
That
you have to have in mind too. Now Cubans, amazingly enough, have the right to travel. They are going in troops to Russia, to countries that don't require visa. And on the other hand, Spain is giving certain Cubans who can prove that their parents or grandparents were Spaniards, they are given a Spanish citizenship. So now it's easy to travel, and every time that these people travel, they go back with the few items that the Cuban government allowed them to bring back to the country. But that helps a little bit to create a situation where it's going to be a famine or some really bad economic situation, at least worse than what it is right now.
Well, another factor, too, that I think is has to be understood is remesas from the United States. I mean, the Cubans
course.
In the United States are sending, I don't know what the figure is. I don't know what the figure is, but it's a significant, I mean, any money, any free money that goes into Cuba is a big help to the regime. But you're right. I mean, many of these people they've concluded that, you know, we survived every one of these crises before. So we'll just do the same thing and survive this time. I think there's a difference, though. There's a difference. When they had crises in the past, at the very beginning, the Soviet Union came in and bailed out the country for 30 years. Then you had all those European loans that, you know, basically provided the liquidity, the loans that they've never been able to repay. But at the moment, there doesn't seem to be anybody who's going to step up and invest in Cuba other than the people who are putting up hotels. But that has a very limited value. There's only so many people you can employ in the hotel industry. So I don't know. Maybe it's different this time. The situation is different, Marcos Nelson, that what worked in the past may not work this time, Marcos Nelson.
I don't know. I mean, you know, remember that historically, the communist system has changed in every country just when the top leadership decides it's time to change.
Mm-hmm.
Even in Poland, in Czechoslovakia, I mean, on those countries, the change happened when mm-hmm. finally the leadership says, okay, we're going to let this happen, like, you know, happened with Jaruzelski in Poland, but mm-hmm. never because a popular uprising.
Mm-hmm.
And because the Cuban people have the escape now of being able to travel overseas, I don't want to have a wishful thinking. I don't think, unfortunately, I think that they're going to find a way and people are going to make the sacrifice, quote unquote, and they're going to remain in power. Now, in the other hand, what is going to happen in 3, 4, 5 years when Canel is out, when Raul Castro die, when more of the so-called historicals have died? That will be maybe an opportunity, but again, it's what happened in every other communist country. When the top leadership says we're going to change, is when they change, but not because popular uprising.
Yeah. So you don't see anything in Cuba. I guess what I'm trying to say, you see that the level of tolerance part of the Cuban people is pretty high because they've put up with a lot, 60 years of sacrifice. And, you know, a lot of us would have expected something, but you don't see anything happening at all. That's what you're saying, right?
Yes. I mean, I don't see anything. I mean, hey, if we have tolerated all this only with the hope that tomorrow we can get into a boat or into a plane and get out of here, mm-hmm. it's the only thing that seems to be person by person what is the goal. By the way, there is a new, I don't have any idea how big it is inside Cuba, but it's a little movement called, I am trying to translate from Spanish, mm-hmm. but no 1 year more.
Yes, yes.
I don't know if you are aware of that.
Yeah, this is a movement where I guess they're trying to say no to the Constitution, right? That's what they're...
No, I mean, they just want to end the control of the Communist Party over the Cuban government and have freedom.
Yes, right.
But you know.
But who's leading that? But who's the leader of that movement? Do you know? Is there a person leading that movement?
I am not sure, but they have. I can tell you something. I saw a Facebook post with the daughter of Cuban American actor Andy Garcia.
Mm-hmm.
The people 14 from 14 and a half. Mm-hmm. It seems to be the dissidents. And one point that I don't know if it's going to happen, because that is the main problem that I believe that we have had, is I wonder if all the dissidents in Cuba, all the different, you know, NGOs and illegal, by the way, are behind this movement. Cubans have, for the last 60 years, and especially after 1980, when the dissident movement, quote unquote, started resurging in Cuba, they have a lot of divisions. Mm-hmm. And even if you read the post of Facebook and other social media in the United States with the Cuban exiles, everybody seems to be criticizing everybody. So the Cubans have enjoyed, not only because we're able to insert agents of the state security into this dissident movement, but they enjoy the fact that we are not even able to agree in the most important points when we are talking, trying to end the communist system in Cuba.
Yeah. Well, not having, you're talking about Poland before. In Poland, the motive or the factor there was, solidarity. That's what got people together. And there was a leader there, Lech Walesa, that we know was there. That doesn't seem, nothing like that seems to be the case in Cuba. Well, I've always been wrong about Cuba making predictions because, I think sometimes we've engaged in a little bit of wishful thinking in our predictions.
You're right.
And we want to believe our own predictions, but I'm going to predict today that I do think that 2019 is going to be a very difficult year. And I'm not going to predict an uprising, but I wouldn't be surprised if Díaz-Canel is replaced at some point, because I just don't see him flying this. If you could think of Cuba as an airplane, I just don't think he has the ability to fly through the type of economic turmoil that I think lies ahead. There's nobody's lending them money. Nobody is helping them. They're going to have to make it on their own. And I think that's the big difference from the previous periods when you had the Russians or the Soviets, or you had European banks willing to lend the Venezuelans. So there doesn't seem to be, I mean, I agree with you that in the past they were able to survive these crises, but there always seemed to be a window they could go to and somebody was willing to help them. I don't see any window like that now. And if the Russians apparently want to return, but they seem to be more interested in a national security or in a different kind of help. I don't think they're in a position to subsidize Cuba, nor do I think they're interested in doing that, Marco Nelson.
Well, no, I mean, they're not going to do it like it was done under Khrushchev and all the other Soviet leaders, but based on the desperate state of the economy in Cuba, every little help. And it seems to me that Russia, Mr. Putin, they are trying to, maybe for security, they are trying to reopen bases in Cuba, and they're going to need to pay for that.
Right. Well, that's true. You're right about that.
So that's a little bit of money. despite all the complaints that the tourists have, they are receiving more than 1 million tourists every year.
Mm-hmm.
That's a serious number of, in an economy like Cuba, it's a serious amount of money that go into the economy. That, by the way, it goes directly into the hands of the military.
Right.
Because
they own everything.
Yes.
That's right. Let me ask you one last question. This is kind of do you remember December 31st, 1958? Do you remember what you were doing this night? Do you have any recollection of this?
No, December 31st. Remember, I am from a very small town south of Havana, but I remember the first.
Yes.
I remember that my mom immediately took me to the central street of the town where there was a factory and people were throwing away all the sewing machines of this woman who owned this cheap work on fabric and make clothing and things like that, one of the few factories in my town. And the workers, quote-unquote, were thrown away to the streets or the sewing machines, and people were into the bars and throwing away the gaming machines and destroying the parking meters and all of that. To me, that was. I was 10 years at the time, and it was quite unexpected. I always had been an admirer of Jose Marti, and somehow in my little brain said, this is wrong, and this is symptomatic of what is there to come. And it came.
That's right. No, you're right, because they may have been angry at the woman who owned the factory, but throwing away the sewing machines basically threw away their jobs. And
yes, exactly.
I'm not sure what, you know, burning up or breaking down parking meters. I don't know how that helped, because that was a source of income for that town, I'm sure. So you're
exactly.
Right. You're right. You're right. The reaction of many people on the first was rather irrational. And as my late uncle, my father's uncle, used to say many, many times, a lot of political immaturity is what he saw around that time. Just a lot of political immaturity that, of course, this is what we've gotten for it. I mean, it just didn't happen by accident. We're still paying the price. Well, listen, enjoy your December 31st with your family, and I hope that you have a fun night tonight, and hopefully we can do another show about Cuba in 2019. But thank you very much for joining me on short notice, and thank you very much. It's always fun to have you on the show.
Happy New Year.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Marcos Nelson Suarez, who, as many of you know, founded a newspaper here in the Dallas area, El Hispano News, and was the owner and the editor of that newspaper for a long time. He has since sold the business, but for a very long time was a very prominent person here in our area and in the Spanish media, Spanish newspapers business, and built quite a phenomenal story that he has, how he put together that newspaper and coverage that he gave to a lot of events. You know, he not only had a newspaper in the sense that he was just, you know, selling advertising, of course, but he also had reporters, and there was an editorial page, and I always enjoyed it very much. I always enjoyed when I used to get a chance to read it, I used to enjoy the newspaper a great deal. So we thank him very much for joining us tonight. And thank you for listening to all of you. And I hope that everybody has a very happy New Year, happy celebration, and a very prosperous and happy 2019. And I hope it brings change to Cuba. We've been saying that many times. Cambio en Cuba. We've said it many times. Let's hope it's finally true. Bye-bye, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.